Greetings, everyone, and thank you once again for tuning in to the Infidel Guy audio show brought to you by freespeech.org. Today, I have a special guest who will be speaking on a variety of issues concerning the origin of religion. Her name is Acharya S. Thank you very much for joining us, Acharya.
How you doing, Infidel Guy?
I am doing great. I'm so glad to have you on the show.
Nice to be on here. We're spreading across the country and around the world.
Who is Acharya S?
You just jump right in there.
I have to.
Who am I? That's a very esoteric question. I could say something very humble like Deepak Chopra and say, I am not.
Okay. I've done some research online, and it appears Acharya seems to be Indian or something of that
nature.
Yeah,
it's an assumed name. Protecting my identity.
Ah.
Well, if my real name were out there, everybody would be probably camped at my doorstep.
Oh, yeah, that seems to be quite obvious. A couple of abortion doctors had to find out that lesson the hard way.
Oh, yeah. Fanatics. Violent fanatics. Well, that's kind of one of the reasons why I do what I do. But you want to know some hard background and not some cosmic answer, right?
Well, maybe a little bit of both. Why not?
I'm an American.
Okay.
And I was educated on the East Coast, and I have a degree in Greek classical civilization, and I'm a member of a very prestigious school for the study of archaeology in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
And, just a general rabble-rouser. I've traveled a bit and know how to learn languages and know several languages to some two more or less degrees, depends on the language. I lived in Greece for a while, so I know that language pretty well, and I know the culture pretty well, and I actually love ancient Greece, which is one of the reasons why I do what I do, because the ancient Greek culture really developed itself very richly, and yes, they stem from Egypt, and they have a lot of Indian influence, and everywhere else that there was society, mm-hmm. of course, influenced them in that Mediterranean area, but they refined it, and I always had a really great feeling about being in Greece, and it seems like their gods were so much more fun and happy-go-lucky and human than the other things that we were encountering, particularly in the Judeo-Christian tradition.
Uh-huh.
So I've been investigating this issue of mythology and religion since I was a child.
Well, the actual name, you said it's Indian, but what does it mean, actually?
Well, it means teacher, master, but also I discovered, ironically, that it means teacher of mysteries, of the mysteries, which is basically what my book is about. As you know, I've written a book called The Christ Conspiracy, The Greatest Story Ever Sold, which was released last year, and which has been selling pretty well, all things considered, considering the topic and the fact that it's a small publisher. It's not really been making much publicity. There was another book released this year that got a lot more publicity and has a very similar theme,
okay.
called The Jesus Mysteries.
Hmm.
But
you're currently working on something right now, correct?
I am? Yeah.
Yes.
I'm addressing some of the criticisms of the first book. For example, in that book I demonstrate that Jesus Christ is a fictional character created by the Roman Empire mystery schools and secret societies to unify the empire under one state religion.
Mm-hmm.
And I show where the story comes from, what it means. I pick it apart quite thoroughly. I had, at one point, 300 more pages,
mm-hmm.
which is another reason I'm writing another book. But so I had like a 700-page book at one point. I had to just chop out all kinds of stuff. There's a lot of material on this. I'm currently going back further in time and checking out some of the earlier historians, because I relied a lot on the criticism of the last few centuries. Which was pretty prevalent in institutions and colleges and universities, especially in Germany,
right.
German school of biblical mythological analysis,
mm-hmm.
instead of historical. And in fact, towards the beginning of the 20th century, it was pretty well established that much of the Bible is mythological. And that was pretty well accepted in the major institutions, more important colleges and universities. And then there was a backlash, of course. There was a push to take it back to historical and literal reality, which it isn't. It isn't reality.
So this is widely known in Germany, you're saying?
Yeah, there was a German school of biblical criticism that was very profound and had a huge impact on all of Europe and also in the United States. And it's ironic then that after that, Germany was basically stomped into the ground. I found that a strange coincidence, but... And now we're back to literalism again in history, and when in fact they really debunked, they worked mostly on the Old Testament and the claims of Israel and the patriarchs, and they showed their predecessors in other religions or their relatives in other mythologies, whatever. And I've done that with the New Testament, but in other words, I've showed the precedent for the character called Jesus Christ in the New Testament, and also showed how this character appears nowhere in history, which has been well known since the beginning. You know, it's not a new criticism.
I know many people who would challenge you on that there.
Yeah, I know, and they try to, but they can't. Because I have, they throw up so-called sources. Josephus, Tacitus, Suetonius, Pliny, their plight is so desperate that they throw up, these sources are really lame. First of all, none of them date from that time.
Right, normally anywhere from, 60 to 400 years after the so-called...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then also some of them are quoted, like Phallus is talking about an eclipse or something like that. They use that as an evidence that Jesus existed and was crucified. He doesn't mention them. Also, that's secondhand,
Okay.
Josephus, of course, has been shown thoroughly to be a forgery. The fact that they keep bringing this up shows how desperate is their plight. And even with, even if we allowed something of these historians' supposed reports, which, come long after the purported events, the fact remains that the story already existed, and how do you explain that? And the fact remains also that the story revolves around the sun, and that the solar religion on this planet has been enormous. It's been everywhere, of course, because up in the sky and there's this huge thing there.
Yes.
It's hard not to notice. And so much of human life has been dependent on the sun. And the sun, of course, was considered the savior of the world because when it rose in the morning, it shed light on the terrors of the night, and it also brought
fear.
It released the fear.
Well, released the fear, right.
Freedom from the fear. And it also brought healing light and light that would stimulate plant growth and also, warm up the planet, too.
So it's kind of obvious, it's kind of obvious even to the ancient people back then that the sun was definitely their savior, indeed.
Yeah, and they personified this solar orb all over the world and basically told the same story. It was born on December 25th of a virgin.
That exact day?
Oh, yeah, because that's the winter solstice. That's the end of the winter solstice. The ancients noticed that in the northern hemisphere, most of the actual Earth, the land mass of the Earth is in the northern hemisphere, so the northern hemisphere has been much more influential in culture, that in the northern hemisphere, the sun would become increasingly small as it would move towards the winter solstice, which is now December 21st, 22nd, beginning then. And they would notice, that the days were getting shorter, so the sun was getting weaker, and it was dying, essentially. And it would die on December 21st. They would notice that at that point, it was the shortest day of the year, of course, but the sun also would stay still on the sundial for 3 days. It didn't move. If you lie on the sun over a period of time and you want to keep facing the sun at the same time of day, you have to keep turning your body southward.
Okay.
And on the winter solstice, it's you wouldn't have to do that for 3 days. It stays still. And then it begins to move northward again.
You know, this is very, very interesting. In some cultures, don't they worship that period of time? Don't they call that the Day of the Dead?
Day of the Dead. That's a good question. I don't know if that's them.
Okay. I know some, maybe you can verify this, in Egyptology, I know during that period of time, they I read a book on ancient Egyptian mythology in which they believe that the sun god, or Ra, actually died for 3 days and was brought back to life by the scarab beetle. I'm not quite sure exactly. There are many different versions, but and that his gods assisted him through the underworld and brought him and resurrected him and brought him back. And actually, this was a daily thing, but when the but a big event was during the winter solstice.
Yeah, that's quite correct. Now, the 3 days thing also applies to the moon. The moon, it's very complicated. You go back in time, and what you discover and how I take the story in my book, once I establish that we're talking about a mythical character, that it's essentially a sun god, sun infertility god, and then I take it back further trying to find the origins, and you get into India and Egypt, of course, is very prevalent, so is the influence of India, so then you have to start going back even further, and you come to the conclusion that most of the world's religions have been astro-theological. They revolve around the heavens, also around nature worship and the earth. But there have been different cults depending on what the culture valued most. For example, before, wherever agriculture developed, before there was agriculture there, people were often nomadic. And in fact, in the area we're talking about, Palestine, the Middle East, where some of these stories come from, that's desert area. And so they were, as nomads, they didn't care much for the hot daytime. They actually traveled by night. So they were very interested in and dependent on the night sky. And they were, they were fascinated by it. It's a very huge thing. It's hard to miss. So they studied the night sky and developed a stellar cult. Of course, the moon also played in that, but apparently the moon was not as big a factor in the earliest.
Right. I don't see that a lot in many cuneiform and ancient, Sumerian cuneiform, nor Egyptian hieroglyphics. The moon doesn't seem to be that big a factor.
Well, the moon is a big factor in that it was represented, Isis essentially is a moon goddess, and she gives birth to the sun god. She's the Virgin Mother. It's also Virgo and the Earth and, just the goddess concept. But they, Osiris, for example, was a great sun god. He was a compilation of many different gods. He was essentially starting to swallow up all the gods in Egypt at the time, a couple thousand years ago. But he was considered to be the light in the moon. And when he was dying, when the moon was waning, he was considered to have died. And when they cut his body into 14 pieces, Set cuts his body into 14 pieces. Those are the 14 days of the lunar month where the moon is waning. But the moon itself was considered female Isis, the receptacle of the sun. Of course, back in or in other places and eras, you had a sun goddess and a moon god. So it's been it's varied from era to era and place to place. But generally, the reason why the sun is considered male is because it's penetrating and the moon is receiving. And that goes back to primitive sexuality, obviously.
We are with Acharya S. today. For those of you just tuning in, we're talking about the origins of religion and maybe even a few more surprises by the time this show ends tonight.
Yeah, can I plug my website?
Yes, actually, I placed a link to your website there on the audio show page. There's a, for those of you who maybe have found this link some other way, which I doubt, but some people do have a consistent link to the show, you can go to her website at www.truthbeknown.com. Okay. The sun. You're speaking of the sun. I've noticed that in many depictions of the sun has wings.
Yeah.
Now, but many ufologists and many people who believe that aliens somehow has something to do with our placement here will state that, no, that wasn't the sun. Those were UFOs. What do you think about this?
Well, I'm not adverse to the concept of other beings in the universe. I think that it's just beyond our ken how enormous the universe is, and to suggest that we're the only sentient life forms is really megalomaniacal. But this idea, you know, we could mention a couple of scholars who really mm-hmm. put out a lot of literature on this mm-hmm. concept. What they ignore, unfortunately, is the statements of the ancients themselves
mm-hmm.
that their gods were the sun, the moon, the stars, nature, the earth. And once you know that, you can't really just make up stuff.
But many do.
Plus, the physical evidence is everywhere. When you go to one of these great ancient sites, there's no question that many of them are oriented to some aspect of solar symbology. Winter solstice, spring equinox, there are so many different other aspects. For example, all the constellations, and you know, those change, and then they're more beyond the 12 divisions that could make up the zodiac today. It's a very complicated thing. And to ignore all of that, make that all go away and say that some goofy aliens landed here. To me, it's really insulting to my intelligence and to the history of the planet. And the ancients. These ancients were not building these stupendous megalithic temples to goofy aliens. I'm sorry. They were far more impressed. If even such creatures existed, they'd be far more impressed by this sun, this enormous sun, or this incredible moon, or the sky that actually provided them with an ability to see into the future to some degree, because the stellar cult people insisted that the night sky was more important because it gave portents. They could see comets and meteors and falling stars, and they would be actually able to prepare if a comet, for example, or a meteor were about to hit the Earth. And I think certainly that has happened many times. And the Earth itself is pocked more than the Moon, apparently, from being hit so many times by things from outer space. So this is a real concern for them. And they were so concerned about the night sky that they got into great battles with the day sky people as agriculture developed.
Hmm.
The night sky people, in fact, found the day sky people in their little villages to be sitting ducks.
Okay.
So that's actually a lot of what the Old Testament is chronicling.
I was going to ask you about that. You mentioned the 12 signs of the zodiac, and the number 12 seems to come up quite frequently, even in the ancient times and in other cultures before Christianity.
Yeah, the sun god had 12 disciples or helpers. That's a very common motif. And in fact, in my book, I also show that the 12 disciples of Christ, who is the Son, and S-U-N, and has been identified as such, even in the New Testament, or rather in the book of Malachi at the end, says the Son of Righteousness will rise with healing on its wings, and then leads right into the New Testament. These are code words.
I mean, are there things in the Bible that point to this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got that. Actually, in my book, The Christ Conspiracy, The Greatest Story Ever Sold, I have a chapter called Astrology, The Bible and Astrology is the title, or Astrology and the Bible. It's been a while since I've read my own books.
Okay.
I read it too much for a while there, because I can't remember everything that's in there either.
You know, of course.
It's a big book. It's got a lot of facts. It's very full. But I can remember very clearly how the traditional and archaeological record describes the growth of religion with the night sky and the day sky.
Hmm.
As we know, Judaism and Islam are essentially night sky. Now they are. They follow the lunar calendar.
Mm-hmm.
They're both desert tribes, nomadic desert tribes. But they also had day sky symbolism.
Symbolism.
Yeah, solar cult worship as well. In fact, okay. Yahweh is the sun god, sun and volcano god.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Elohim.
Yes.
The other word for God, and it means gods.
Mm-hmm.
The Elohim are essentially Canaanite gods, via, Egypt, Phoenician gods in there too, but the Elohim are different aspects of the sun. El Elyon is God Most High. It is in the house of El Elyon that the sun at noon is teaching in his father's mansion.
Okay.
That motif of the great teaching mm-hmm. God at age 12
mm-hmm.
is common in other mythologies.
Oh, man, this is just almost like a revelation here. So when people are talking about the temple of the Lord, they're really talking about the sky.
Yeah, the tabernacle is actually the sun's tent.
Mm.
Yeah, the solar symbolism is everywhere, and with good reason. You know, the swastika is a solar symbol.
Really?
It's very common. It goes back thousands of years, and in fact, it's an early Christian symbol.
I was going to ask about early Christian symbols. Zechariah Sitchin, in his book, he talks about the cross being even as old as the cultures in Sumeria. Did the cross have the same meaning then as it did in the later Semitic cultures and religions? Did it still mean the zodiac even then?
It was a solar symbol, and it represents not only the crossification of the equinoxes,
okay.
where the sun, the day and the night are equal.
Okay.
But also the sun at the horizon.
Speaking of horizon, I did some reading. I believe Jordan Maxwell, I'm sure you're familiar with him. He mentions, and I'm quite sure you probably delved a little into this as well. He mentioned that the word horizon even comes from Horus risen, like Horus is risen.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the etymology there, but
okay.
it's pretty neat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed that. Well, in the English language, I'm sure you know Germanic anyway, right? And many of our words we use today come from many, many ancient religions and cultures, actually.
Yeah, there's a lot of Greek and Latin. Of course, Greek and the Greek particularly can be traced to India, Sanskrit. Mm. Hey, I want to say something about the cross that you're talking about, the age of it. There's this anthropological find in the Alps.
Okay.
I believe it's in the South Alps, where in Italy or near Italy. Of a frozen human, the Iceman.
Right.
Have you heard about that?
Oh, yeah, I've heard about
Iceman.
Well,
when they first discovered him, there were reports that, I think he goes back 9,000 years, or maybe 9,000 BC.
Okay.
I'm not sure which one, but we're talking old. And the early reports said that, first of all, he was wearing a hemp backpack, which I thought was extremely cool. You know, way back then, actually the hemp was the big thing back then, as it should be today.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, he was also apparently wearing a cross around his neck.
Interesting.
And I remember that being in the early reports, but then nothing mentions that anymore. You know, you never see that mentioned in the story anymore.
Yeah, of course they wouldn't.
And you'll find, of course, the cross on archaeological monuments to go back. I became very fascinated at one point years ago with Mason's marks on the island of Crete.
Mm.
Since discovered that a lot of them are solar symbols. Of course, the lunar story is actually pretty prevalent. Noah's Ark is the lower quarter of the moon. If you look at the sky,
mm-hmm.
when it looks like a little slice, you know, not a semicircle.
A bow, a little like upside down rainbow or something, a little bow there?
Yeah, a bow, exactly.
Okay.
That's Noah's Ark. And Noah is also a sun god.
Interesting.
Solar symbol.
Oh, okay. So pretty much every phase of nature was deified or personified, basically.
You have to call it polytheism or pantheism.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we know that's quite common in India. Everywhere you turn, there's a spirit or a deva. At pantheism, the pagan world is essentially pantheistic, and even in the Old Testament, you'll find that the Israelites worshipped many gods, and that Yahweh is this obnoxious intruder who basically says, you know, because you worship other gods, I have a right to slaughter you. But they also have this kind of it's like our minds. Our minds can contain the concepts of polytheism, monotheism, pantheism, and atheism all at once.
Yes.
We are able to conceive of these things, especially if we're fairly experienced and deep, perhaps, because we've actually given consideration to all these concepts.
Mm-hmm.
There are times when it's quite clear that there's no good God in charge of anything here. I think it's an insult to my intelligence. When I've studied the world's religions and history so mm-hmm. in depth, and every time I turn over a rock, I find an atrocity.
Right.
You know, to tell me that there's some good big being completely in charge of everything, it's just, I'm sorry, but it's not going to fly here, because you just cannot justify this. The atrocity that has happened on this planet has been horrendous, and it never ends.
Yes. We are talking with Acharya S., speaking of the origins of religion. Acharya has a book out, and you can click on a link there to her book. And the title is, again, Acharya?
The Christ Conspiracy, The Greatest Story Ever Sold.
If you have any questions for Acharya S., please, you can instant message me at, hopefully you've downloaded a Yahoo Instant Messenger, and you can go ahead and instant message Acharya with a question, and I'll read it back, and she can hopefully respond to you in due time. Demons. I'm sure once, you know, demons arise from fear of night and fear of darkness.
Yeah, that's true.
I noticed something. I want your maybe your validation on this, but I think it's a pretty sound concept myself that I've come up with here. I've noticed that, once again, ancient man utilized their world around them to understand things. And I could see why the sun would have wings, because that's the only way ancient man could understand how things could fly or stay in the sky without wings. I mean, every example of nature of things that could fly had wings. Like
that's
birds.
Very good. And they thought, of course, that the sun was rising from the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also why Horus, the sun god of Egypt, or a sun god of Egypt, was represented as a falcon.
The god of war, or representation of war. I thought, was it a war god?
Well, no, they could. I suppose any of them could be invoked in times of war, but no, he was a solar god. His story, of course, is basically that which is found in the New Testament 2,000 years later. Born of a virgin on December 25th, 12 disciples. Gosh.
Same story over and over again, huh?
Yeah, it's the same story. And they were crucified and resurrected. Even Krishna of India has a very, very similar story. That's one of the things I'm addressing in my new book, which is called Sons of God, S-U-N.
And you're writing this right now?
Yeah, I'm researching it right now and writing. I love the researching part, but it's a lot of work, I tell you, and it can be grueling. But, you know, Horus, I can give you, okay, Horus's story. Born of the virgin Isis Mary on December 25th in a cave or manger, his birth was announced by a star in the east and attended by three wise men. His earthly father was named Seb, as in Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
He was of royal descent. At age 12, he was a child teacher in the temple, and at 30, he was baptized, having disappeared for 18 years. Horus was baptized in the river Eridanus, or Iarutana, which is equivalent to Jordan, to the Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
His baptizer was named Anup the Baptizer,
mm-hmm.
Anup, John,
mm-hmm.
Who was decapitated.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, that story represents the movement of the sun into the sign of Aquarius. Aquarius is the water bearer, which mm-hmm. is essentially the Baptist. And the decapitated part happens in the summer. Apparently, the sun is backdropped by Aquarius, and its head is cut off by the horizon. And they called the summer the Herod monster or something like this. And very interesting. Hmm. This is much of my information is based on Gerald Massey.
Oh, okay. Who's Gerald Massey?
One of the best mythicists that ever lived. He's just brilliant. And so the story continues. You know, Horus performed miracles and raised El Lazarus from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know that story, right? Lazarus?
Yes.
El Osiris.
Something that they... Oh, really?
Yeah, Asar was his archaic name.
Okay.
So El Asar. El, of course, is an ancient god.
Right.
El Lazarus, that's where the name comes from.
But I've noticed that many names end in El, so they're really saying, like, the god of, and then something.
Yeah,
else.
Or the name means beloved of God or something
like
that.
Samuel and
not,
Emmanuel.
Not El Lazarus, but they use this term to denote some connection with the divinity or deity itself. El being the singular of Elohim.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several El's. Like I said, El Elyon was the God Most High, and then there's El Shaddai, God Almighty. These are Canaanite pantheon. Horus also had a Sermon on the Mount.
Interesting.
And his epithet was Ayusa, so he delivered the sayings of Ayusa.
Hmm. That sounds familiar.
Jesus, Joshua, as it would be in the Hebrew. And it goes on. He was, you know, crucified between two thieves, buried for 3 days in a tomb, and resurrected. The crucifixion between the two thieves actually is the sun. When the sun is weakening, the two thieves are Sagittarius and Capricorn.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that the sun was side wounded. That's another common motif. You know, the spear of Longinus and the side of Jesus. Actually, the side wounding is common in the story of Odin and I believe a couple of other ancient gods. It refers to the archer of Sagittarius shooting the sun, weakening it at that time of the year. And then, of course, after it died at the winter solstice, it was reborn. They call it the babe sun, and that was, you know, the birthday of the sun. And in fact, in the ancient world prior to the Christian era, the priests would bring out the babe in the manger, the golden babe in the manger, and people would have great festivities at that time.
Golden?
The golden god in the manger. Gold is, of course, associated with the sun. Mm-hmm. And there's gifts that were given to Jesus, the gold, frankincense, and myrrh. These were all symbols of the sun. These were all presented to the sun.
Even
the Christian era.
Even the mention of the golden calf, etc., and things of this nature?
Yeah, well, the golden calf is Horus. Horus is the golden calf when he's born of Hathor. Isis is Hathor, the moon goddess, the cow moon goddess.
Is that why it's so popular in India?
Oh, the cows?
Sacred cow.
Well, they're pretty well valued there because of the fact that they give milk and...
Mm-hmm.
I guess because, you know, it's very poor in some areas. And actually, there were many places in India that killed and ate cows, so it hasn't been a complete, you know, it's not a... it's varied from time to time and place to place. India is very complicated, though. There's so many different peoples there.
I noticed that they're not so easily fooled by the Christian missionaries, are they?
No, but because the story of Krishna was very similar. And in fact, in my book, I reveal that one of the earliest gospels was called the Gospel of Paul or the Gospel of the Lord. And it was the book in the New Testament that was created by the Gnostic heretic, Christian heretic named Marcion. This book, to me, in my mind, this book was brought by Apollonius of Tyana from India and contained this essential story of Krishna as found, particularly the birth stories as found in the Bhagavad Purana. But then the book was taken to Rome and translated into Greek and Latin. It was added to also from Alexandria. That was a huge center of learning and factor in the Christ conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
And added to, and then presto, we have the four Gospels.
Goodness, I mean, you mentioned translation after translation after translation. My goodness, what is the most tremendous mistranslation that you can think of that if people would just know about it, maybe they'll just drop their dogmatic religious belief altogether that you can think of in the Hebrew?
The Hebrew Bible?
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty, but I'm quite sure there's something in there.
Well, the fact that the various gods that we're talking about a polytheistic culture, and that eventually all of these gods and their names and just the word for gods itself or god, it's all translated as a singular god. That right in itself is deceptive. If you go back to the original Hebrew, you find all this polytheism all over the place. And the translators, of course, have imposed monotheism on it. So that in itself is a big problem. Then you have the Septuagint, which is the Greek Bible. It was, you know, translated, the Old Testament supposedly was translated into the Greek, but there's so many variants there from the Masoretic, the Hebrew text. It gets very complicated.
Yeah, even they translated it basically, I mean, literally, correct? So a lot of the reference to the Son of God is actually incorrect, right?
I don't know what you're referring to in the New Testament?
Old. Well, actually, I guess it would be the New Testament, huh? Like Son of God, etc., or all the representations of people being the son of some deity were probably...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Though.
Yeah, were actually all incorrect then if one were to actually understand how they utilize their words.
Well, they had so many of the various characters in the Old Testament had their names, like ending in Baal.
Mm-hmm.
Baal, of course, was a Phoenician and Canaanite god, and then there's El, and then there's Yah. So a lot of the heroes actually are followers of Baal, not necessarily Yahweh.
Mm.
In fact, it's clear that Yahweh was a warrior, a war god invoked in times of war, and that many of the people in that area, whether they were Israelite or Canaanite or Phoenician or whatever, really did not like Yahweh. Yahweh was constantly making war, so they actually propitiated other gods to get rid of Yahweh.
Yet there's a movement here in Atlanta, a group, I'm not quite sure, I forgot their whole name, but some divine metaphysical school here in which they're saying that Yahweh is the one and original God, and that's where even Judaism and any other Christianity or Christian-type belief system, any belief system that believes in the one God, I guess they call it, that has all these different emotions, they claim that Yahweh is the... one and true God.
Yeah, of course, because they've been brainwashed by the Old Testament.
And they have proof.
They think they're throwing off the... I assume you're talking about the Black Israelite movement.
Yes, that's exactly...
I've almost been beaten by those people. They're very vicious. Whew. Yeah, well, because they think that's going to restore to them some dignity if they lay claim to being the chosen people.
Mm-hmm.
You know? If they've been raised in India... They would think that Brahman or Shiva or Krishna are the one true God, and
that's
know, they
so true.
Be fanatic about that, and trace their roots to that, and try to associate themselves with, you know, the chosen of that God. It's very culturally decided. It's really not the ultimate truth. And in fact, you're talking about even in the first century BCE, Diodorus Siculus, an ancient historian.
Okay.
Stated that Yahweh is I-A-O, which is an Egyptian god.
Ah.
So, trying to trace it back to Africa and India,
mm-hmm.
in Africa and Egypt, which is cool because a lot of it certainly comes from there.
Well, thank you.
If they were to go actually to the Egyptian,
mm-hmm.
And go beyond the Bible, because the Bible is a later development out of the Egyptian culture, they would find themselves encountering a much much nicer and better considered theology.
Interesting. We are with Acharya S. This is the Infidel Guy audio show. It's our first live show, and Acharya is pretty much helping pioneer the show this evening. Acharya, you have a question from J. Kirk 77. Did you have the problem of a Bible-believing mom? If so, did you ever try to convince her about the non-existence of God?
Not really. That's a complicated question. Because my mother was a churchgoer, and she's a very lovely person, but she never brought any of this stuff into... it was not a factor in our lives. We were very secular. We went to church and so forth, but my mother, I never heard her talk about Jesus Christ or anything.
Okay.
But she was a deacon of her church, and but she's it's a very classy kind of Protestant type thing, you know. Well, not so emotional and and nutty about things like this. But particularly, my family is fairly well educated, so. But when my book was released, I was concerned. Because they've been very good to me, and I asked my mother, I said, you know, you're very good to me, and here I go destroying your religion.
Yeah.
And she said, well, you know, I don't really know what my philosophy is. To me, it's just a social thing. And basically, she's one of the most honest people I know. So she loves me, and, you know, I'm more significant than some crazy fanaticism or something. So.
Okay.
I understand probably what this person is also asking is how he needs to deal with.
Right, and we know that's an individual thing, and nobody really knows how to deal with it. Only thing I suggest to people is just be truthful. But if you feel like it's going to adversely affect you and your relationship with every single person in your family, it's up to you to take that risk if you want to do that or not.
You know, you're a very mature kid. Hard to believe you're only 25.
Oh, well, thank you very much. once again, we're speaking with Acharya S. here on the first live show. If you wish to ask Acharya a question, once again, you can go to Yahoo and instant message me at infidel_guy and email me your question. Jay Kirk has another question for you, Acharya.
Okay.
He says, I don't know if you've done any research on this, and I already know what you're going to say pretty much, but with Christmas coming, where did Santa Claus really come from?
Oh, that's a good question. There is the story that there was a Saint Nicholas in the 4th or 5th century, I believe. But I've seen some stuff that debunks that as well. And of course, you know, there are those who say that Santa is Satan backwards. But I like the story that he's the Amanita muscaria mushroom. Have you read that?
No, I have not.
Well, you know, it's a red and white mushroom, and it's psychedelic.
Oh, you mean like the manna from heaven?
Mm. Yeah. Although I'm not too sure about that etymology. It might be weak. Certainly, these psychedelics were used in mystery initiations and rites.
Charlie, I'm sure you'll agree. If you look at the majority of most of our ancient cultures, I mean, all they did was stay high.
And who could blame them?
rough times.
Well, also, it's interesting, the North Pole thing with the Santa Claus, because the Amanita muscaria was widely used, to my knowledge, was widely used in the North, particularly in Scandinavia and Russia area, Siberia, and so forth. In fact, I think the story goes that the rich people would be able to consume the Amanita muscaria, and then, which they had to do very carefully. They had to mix it with something, or I'm not too sure about the chemistry involved, but apparently it's poisonous, so you can't just go and eat it. And then they would urinate in buckets and put the buckets outside so the poor people could get wasted.
Okay. Yeah, that's one way. Yeah.
And that, of course, you know, maybe that's the origin of giving presents at Christmas. I don't know.
Goodness.
So it is Santa Claus. I don't know. It's a pretty good thesis. I kind of like the wilder the better, unless reducing all of our great astrotheology to aliens. Then I don't get too crazy about that wildness. But
yeah, earlier I mentioned demons, and I talked about how the sun, they basically utilized what they could see. Birds could fly. Hey, suns could fly. I was thinking, demonology. I mean, almost every depiction I've seen of a demon, you have a dark character, which, once again, you're light versus dark. You have this dark character, and they normally have these outstretched wings, these bat-like wings. I was beginning to wonder, did they probably get this from the bat? And then that would make sense why the bat was considered the evil, and it is called the creature of the night. So,
that's good thinking.
Yeah, I think sometimes I regress, you know, and I wonder, what did people think? Like, you kind of hit on it earlier. The ancients had no idea what they were looking at. You know, they had no concept. You know, and I do that. I look at the sky now, and I imagine as if I had no knowledge of these things at all.
And particularly if you haven't been raised in a culture that teaches you that they're basically purely mechanical forces with no personality or animation behind them, you know, like animas and soul. But if you're raised where people saw spirits and anima everywhere, you know, mm-hmm. then you'd be really in awe of it. Awe and fear, of course, but... And it's still awesome if you go out in the middle of the night outside in nature and take a look at the sky. It's like, phew, I can understand their awe for sure. And so, yeah, but you're right in going to and looking at natural things around us to determine a lot of this iconography and symbolism. Because that does come from there. And, of course, a lot of it also comes from fertility. So we have phalluses and caves, rock pillars representing phalluses and caves representing wombs and so forth.
Mm.
That iconography is everywhere in religion as well, even in Christianity and Judaism. And I show that in my book, too. There's a chapter on the Bible and sex and drugs in there as well. The book, of course, is called The Christ Conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. And once again, you can go to her website and find that book at www.truthbeknown.com. Do you have any recommended books or videos that our viewers could, I'm sorry, listeners, soon to be viewers, that our listeners could possibly read?
Well, of course I recommend my own book, but, you know, then there's the video that I offer at my site that you've had such fun with called The Naked Truth. And that would be cool. You couldn't put that on the net. You're going to put our TV on there, huh?
Mm.
Not too bad this stuff, because I want to do this, too.
I will definitely talk to you after the show on how to do this.
That would be great. The Naked Truth, you know, I wish there were more like...
Oh, really? Yes.
...like that out there.
Mm-hmm.
People complain, it's not all that well done. Well, a friend of mine did it. I subsequently became friends with him. And he had to go through a lot to do this, and... It wasn't some big organization out there that says, here's $1 million to show the origins of our religions and basically prove
exactly.
It was false.
You know? Right.
Even today, we have very few resources to put this information out there. So anytime something is published or produced, I'm pretty grateful
mm-hmm.
for it.
Yeah, one good example in a video that I hope entice our listeners to go ahead and get that video. They show all the evidence of the zodiac being within these religions in churches. I mean, the church has these zodiac symbol. They have the symbolism. It's all throughout Christianity and Catholicism, and they get it all from previous Semitic cultures.
Yeah, well, Northern and European as well. I mean, it's actually found all over the world. But
wow.
The symbolism, particularly in Catholic churches.
Mm-hmm.
The host and the wafer. The wafer is actually a sun burst. And in fact, in the 19th century, St. Peter's throne or chair was cleaned, and they found the 12 labors of Hercules on the chair. So,
wow.
You know, there was not such a big break between Christianity and paganism. In fact, practically all of Christianity can be traced to earlier concepts found in the rest of the world.
I hear rumors that the Vatican is actually built on an ancient...
Mithra.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's well known.
That's true.
The caverns, the catacombs underneath are filled with iconography for Mithra and Horus. There's the Madonna and Child, Horus, Isis holding Horus.
Because
Isis worship was huge in the Mediterranean at that time. She, of course, is the Virgin Mother.
It would be nice that there's a church called the Shrine of the Black Madonna.
Yeah, there's black Madonnas all over the place. In fact,
they don't know this original story, of course.
Which original story?
What you're telling me, the original story. Of course
yeah.
not.
I'm not sure what you want to ask.
Well, of course, they have their own story, of course, but...
Why it's a black Madonna?
Right.
Oh, yeah, they claim that the soot was making it black.
Oh.
But its eyes somehow stayed white. But even in India, I have an image in my book. I don't know what the date is. It may be you know, after the development of Christianity, probably is, because a lot of India has been destroyed, the Muslims and the Brits and the Portuguese before them, and just went rampaging and destroyed thousands of temples, and it's very difficult to sort it all out now. But there is an image of Krishna being suckled by his virgin mother, Devaki, and he's got he's got kinky hair. He's essentially negroid in features. And you've read John Jackson, I assume?
No.
John Jackson is really excellent.
Shall I write this person down? I have 10 books.
I'd recommend, particularly to your African-American listeners.
John Jackson?
Because I find him to be very balanced, but he also brings in the whole African contingent that has been disparaged and ignored. And he's not like overly Afrocentric, though.
Oh, great, as I'm not.
I'm not either. I mean, I find the culture all over the world to be fascinating. But
exactly. Once again, we have Acharya S. With me here in the Infidel Guy audio show. First live broadcast. I have 4 minutes left in the show. There's a question by, looks like, Nun World Order here. where'd you give me the real name? Oh, here it is, Mario. You have Mario in New Jersey. He is curious when a new book might be expected, although you did kind of hit on that, but when do you think you'll be finished with your current work?
Wow, that's a good question. Hi, Mario. I'm really in the beginning stages here because I was going to just make it an essay for my site, and then as I was doing it, I said, why am I doing this? First of all, it's going to get too long, and secondly, I just got carried away with the research, you know.
Yeah.
I get on the detective trail. I can't get my nose off of it for a while. But, you know, the first one, although it was a culmination of decades of research, the first one only took me about 9 months to write. So
okay.
I suspect that I could probably get this out sometime next year.
You might have to make a volume.
A what?
An extensive volume.
Well, it'll be a book again, not an essay or an article or a booklet or something.
Okay.
It'll definitely be a book. I don't know. If all goes well, I'll be able to just keep plugging away, and in a few months it'll... But I haven't solicited any publishers or anything yet, so I don't know what I'm going to do about that. I may publish it myself.
Okay.
But, you know, the first book, actually, I was very pleased. It got out into Borders and Barnes & Noble. That's pretty good distribution. And people buying it in the Atlanta bookstore.
Yeah, and
the Atlanta airport.
Oh, okay. As soon as I get the money up.
Well, you know, I'm sure we could get you a review copy from my publisher.
No, I want an autographed.
That'd be cool. I sell them cheaper than Amazon.
Okay. Oh, great.
And the book's been doing very well on Amazon, by the way.
That's great. How are things looking, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, it hasn't sold a vast amount, but considering how many thousands it has sold,
The material.
What's that?
The material. What you're speaking of?
Yeah, and considering considering how controversial and how much anger it provokes, it seems to be having a pretty decent influence. So that's pretty cool. And there are people out there who are passing it out in like 5 copies at a time. I know of a professor who's done that, but they won't. You know, they won't jump in the fray. They're just reading it behind the scenes.
Okay.
They're going to deny me, you know.
Well, Acharya, time is up here. 1 minute before the hour on my time here. And I'd really like to thank you for coming on to the Infidel Guy audio show. And what I'm going to do is place you on hold here. Do you have any last words, anything that you'd like the audience to know?
Oh, yeah. I want to thank you for having me on. It's been splendid. And also, I wanted you to know that all of my female friends think you're a hottie.
Well, thank you very much.
You even got the attention of a lesbian friend of mine, so...
Wow. Okay.
She likes your mind a lot.
Oh, wow. Oh, she read the site, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think you've got a really big fan there.
Oh, great.
And
that's great.
And she's a self-critic.
No one... Oh, by the way, speaking of which... I don't get that many emails from people who are my fans. So I would appreciate it if you're listening to the show, email me, infidelguy@aol.com. Go ahead, Acharya, anything else?
No, that's just about it for now. I'd love to come back on.
Okay, and I'm going to go ahead and save this in the archives for our viewers who missed the first half hour of the show, for those coming in late. And I'm going to put you on hold, Charlie. I got to talk to you a little bit longer.
Okay, cool.
Okay, and I'll see you. My next show will be tomorrow at 8 p.m. Thank you.